to the edge of this. Maybe I will never quit. Right, 'cause you're feeling it. Push it, push it, push it.
Hello, and welcome to the Lost Dot Podcast. Today, you are with me, Taylor Doyle, as I begin a special series where we spotlight the women in our races called Women Who Race. I am so excited about this series. I am an ultra-distance cyclist myself. I work as the media manager for Lost Dot, and we are the team behind the Transcontinental Race, the Trans-Pyrenees Race, and new for 2024, the Accursed Race. We are endeavoring to get as many women and non-binary people than ever before to TCR number 10 happening in July 2024. TCR stands for Transcontinental Race and in short is a self-supported 4,000-kilometer race across Europe. I'm a believer in proclaiming your mission if you have one so that it can come to fruition. So here I am laying out our not-hidden agenda in getting more women to the start. I hope that in the episodes released in the coming months, that you, dear listeners, will be inspired and moved to try ultra racing for yourself. And if, as would be likely, you already are a self-supported racer or experienced ultra distance rider, that you might reach out to the women in your life and find ways to encourage and support those interested in the sport to give it a go. Regardless of gender, these stories that we are going to share here are for everyone and are going to be inspiring. You will be inspired, and it's going to be fun, so let's do it. Thank you so much for being here, and I wholeheartedly hope that you enjoy this series as much as I enjoy bringing it to you. To debut this series, it couldn't be more perfect that I met up with Han Liu, this year's Lantern Rouge of TCR number 9 and a recipient of the Mike Hall Bursary. The Mike Hall Bursary is an initiative created by Lost Dot to reinforce our commitment to equal opportunity and accessibility. The bursary is designed to support those who would otherwise unlikely be on the start line of the Transcontinental due to financial barriers. You can find out more about the bursary on our website and in the show notes. Han Liu was also a Green Leaderboard rider. The Green Leaderboard is an initiative that was introduced at TCR this year that I am incredibly proud to be a part of and champions those riders who commit to a flight-free approach to their travel to and from the race. Han is an amazingly determined athlete. You'll hear this right away in my interview with her. She is fantastically stubborn and possesses that undeniable, unyielding energy so often found in long-distance cycling communities. She was born in Vietnam and raised in London, and later in life decided to quit her job in IT and start her own Pilates business as an instructor. She's no stranger to carving her own path and unflinchingly seizing the opportunities that come her way. You'll hear more about her life and how she arrived at the start line of the Transcontinental Race to inspire us all in the interview you're about to hear. So let's hear it. Thanks for being here. Welcome, Han. Thank you so much for meeting with me today.
Thank you for meeting me.
So before we jump into your TCR experience, can we go very early back to the very beginning and talk about a little Han and Han as a child? So when you were younger, would your younger self have believed that you could finish something like the TCR one day?
God, no. So the younger me, sport didn't exist. So sport was a necessity rather than a, like cycling. You would cycle A to B commuting rather than cycling for fun. Mm-hmm. My background is pretty much academic. We had to go and get our academic education out of the way, do all that stuff. Sport was not a thing. I didn't get into sport until a lot later, but according to my sister, since I was probably in my 20s, 30s, when I'm a bit more open, I keep talking about cycling. But nobody wanted to go with me. I didn't have anyone to go with me, so the fear of going to do it by yourself, I didn't know what to do anyway. I didn't get into sport until into my late 40s.
Wow.
And here we are. So now I'm got bundles of energy that I need to download from collecting over the years of not doing anything.
Is that how you see it? Oh, yeah. Wow. Yeah. So you've not always been
a sport person, though. No. Okay. Absolutely not. I've always been like the in school, because I grew up in Vietnam. I came over when I was 9. And then over here, PE, physical education, it was just wasn't such a big deal for me because I'm such a small frame, I never get picked for team.
Oh.
I'm always the last one get picked, so it was never really a big deal. So I didn't really do much cycling as a young child. And then working in London, I was working in the city and always sitting out the window, we talk about cycling and everything else, but we're always scared of like the traffic. Mm-hmm. So until I moved to Canary Wharf, and it took 2 years later after the move there that I started getting a bike, commuting on a bike. Oh. And then the Olympic 2012, they started the Ride London. So uh-huh. I thought, there's a bike, let's sign up.
Perfect.
So I signed up, got the place. But 2013 was the first year that they did the bike ride, but I was injured with back pain, back pain. So I deferred it to the following year, started just cycling slowly and then start training for the Ride London. And then that year, it was a stormy year. So not many people, I think it's about a third of, maybe I'm a bit wrong on the stats, a third people didn't turn up because of the storm.
Right.
So I turned up anyway and like eager to go. And the route got shortened down to 86 miles. I had to come back to do the hills. So I signed up again the following year, got in again, and I think I've done it about 5 times now. I had to come back and do the Leith Hill and Box Hill. Yeah, my knee was starting to hurt, so I packed up cycling for a little bit. I got into running, started running, and then got full circle back to triathlon again. Did triathlon, so now I'm back onto the bike. So
yeah.
So last year I did the training for a big swim because my swim was the weakness. My running was okay, and then now this year the big bike ride, and it's like full circle. And I didn't expect to get into TCR.
Okay.
I knew when I applied, it was just a crazy moment. It was just like reigniting me. I found out about TCR back in 2013 when I started looking up Ride London.
Oh, wow.
That's when I came across it and I like, nah, it's like, it was a dream. It was just like, yeah, that would be nice. But I was like, yeah, you're in no shape of doing that. It's only last year where I was training, swimming training. I kept bumming to a guy. He was swimming to complement his cycling training for TCR. Right.
No way.
And wow. That's when it got dropped back into my head, TCR.
Right.
And then I looked it up and I was like, wouldn't it be great do it for my 50th? Wouldn't it be great?
Did you have role models growing up? Or did you have, maybe it is in terms of cycling, but even just outside of that, like, is there anyone that has sort of made you the way that you are?
No, I think my mum, my sisters. My mum works really hard, so it's like when we came over here, they didn't have the education. So education is something that we have to follow regardless. And they want to make sure that they didn't have the opportunity, we have the opportunity to better ourselves. So that was always the key. That kind of like drawn into our head so that if an opportunity arises, you take on it. So when TCR opportunity arises, there was nothing that's going to stop me from not doing it.
Yeah.
Even if I turn up to the start line and I do a couple of days.
Yeah.
You know, I just didn't know how far I would go.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, just turn up, do what you can.
Wow.
And then we'll go from there.
Yeah.
And it was a case of if I didn't accept this.
Right.
I wouldn't know. I don't know if I won't have an opportunity yeah. again. The bursary place is only once in a lifetime, only allowed once. So,
yeah. Wow, opportunities.
Opportunity, yeah, exactly.
And saying yes, I guess.
Yes.
Part of your philosophy.
Yes, exactly. It was just like there was no way that I'm not going to turn up.
Amazing. Well, I'm so glad that you did. And I know that so many dot watchers and people that were inspired by you over the race are also so glad that you did.
I love it. I love to see how much you can push on your body.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad that I didn't have any injuries.
It's incredible, TCR. Honestly.
I'm really amazed.
Yeah.
I'm absolutely amazed.
Congratulations.
I'm completely amazed. So I'm really grateful that I had the bite fit. Because I think that's a major key point. I had shoe issues from the beginning. That's because the cleat was tightened on too tight. It shifted out place. Mm. So the first night, I was stopping to adjust my cleat all the time. Clipping in shoes, I haven't used for 5 years.
Oh, wow. Okay, yep. We've all been there.
Yeah, the last time I used it, and there was like knee pain and stuff, and I thought, oh, no, I'll stop it. I'll just go to trainers. And at all my races, I was in trainers, and then now they said, you have to go clip in hand. I'm like, okay. So it was strange at first. So I think it was a lot of rookie mistakes that I should have done a lot more training before. Try all my kit before turning up to the race.
Yeah.
Rather than testing out on the race day. That's for sure. And then saddle sore kicking in after the second night.
Classic.
And I was like, oh my God, what am I going to do? So, it was just like, it was little things start chipping into me. Mm-hmm. And I had to think about like, okay, what's going on here? How are we going to do this? You are way behind right now. So I had to start thinking like, what am I going to do?
Yeah, that must have been, I mean, was it hard to know that you, where you were sort of in the race and what was going through your mind, sort of, what kept you going?
On the first night when we started, when we got to the square, I was panicking already because I couldn't clip out. And as I stood in the middle of the square there, I was so nervous. Everything started creeping in. Everything just started going over my head. I'm like, Han, what are you doing? Are you ready for this? I was getting so nervous. I was shaking. I told all the riders, please go past me. I'm going to fall. I don't want to pull you down. Just go ahead. I'm just going to hang back. So I waited until everyone go. And I was like, Han, you have to go now. You cannot be the last person to leave. So I started pedaling. So I'm so glad that I can get all up the hill without any problem. So first night, it was raining.
Yes, very wet.
Very wet, raining all through the night. And my route that I'd chosen was cycling path. So it was off the main road. Mm-hmm. And there was no place to stay.
Okay.
So my plan was just to go and ride as far as I can, do a bivvy night and carry on. But because I was all wet, I couldn't stop for bivvy, couldn't stop for staying. And that would mean that I would get cold, so I rode all night. And then the following morning, I was so tired. I was so tired. So the second day, I was going really slow because I was so tired. There was nowhere to stop to sleep because everywhere was wet.
Okay.
I couldn't find any shelter. My battery started running out.
Yep.
I got lost.
Okay.
Very early in the evening, I got lost. That was around 5-6 o'clock. No, actually, it was after 7 because the reception for the campsite was closed. I carry on walking, I look up and there was a campsite. So I turn in, stay in the campsite and getting ready. And the following morning, I was supposed to leave early, but the following morning it was raining again. So I thought I'd sit out and see how it goes. That would have been day 3 and saddle sore kicked in. Shoe was okay, a little bearable. And I was like, Han, you haven't moved very far. What are you going to do? Mm. You're so behind. I think that would have been Monday. So 2 more days is the cutoff time for the checkpoint 1. Right. How are you going to make it? How are you going to make it? You're in pain now. You hardly moved and you're on the third day. I was close to giving up that day. And then I had a chat with my sister and they kicked my ass. They said, Han, this is what you dream of doing. You go and sort yourself out. Go and get new bibs. Go and get new saddle and get on. Just get on. Just carry on doing it. Get to checkpoint 1. So I cycle. I carry on going. And I think entering into Switzerland, that's when I saw a bike shop. Yep. And I was able to get a new saddle.
Nice.
So new saddle in place. All through across Switzerland, I was struggling because I kept clipping out and my bibs short was too big for me.
Oh, no.
So when it was wet, it was fine because it stuck to you. But when it was dry, it's very uncomfortable. And then, so I keep going. Every single shop I go in, they didn't have my size. Like, okay, great. Just go. Italy, they will have it. So when I hit Bormio, went in to sort out my bike because at that point, throughout Switzerland, I damaged my derailleur.
Oh.
And my gear was jumping. And I was climbing all the climb on six gear. Yeah. So I just keep jumping from the big and the small and changing three on the back.
Oh, dear.
That was all I had to play with. And then it was... So I got into Boromir. First thing I did was took the bike in, got it to get it fixed. As soon as the guy looked at it, your hanger snapped.
Oh.
We don't have a part. I'm like, I have a part.
Perfect.
So they changed it for me. That was great. So they changed me, set me a wall back up. So why they did that, I went shopping before the shop closed, bought some bib shops.
Nice.
And then, ready for Stelvio.
Wow.
The following day.
Oh, my god.
And then the following day, Stelvio, it was cloudy. It was raining, drizzling rain. Uh-huh. I was like, just go, hon. Just go. Slowly go. I'm glad I started early and just went. I can't remember what time I started, but I went. But as I was climbing up, riders going down was like, don't go. Don't go.
No, really.
They were saying, don't go up. They were waving their fingers at me. Don't go up.
Right.
As I go up, it was just cloud. As I was going up, the view looking up was great. And I didn't dare to stop to take a picture because I was scared of not being able to get back on the bike again because of my clip-on shoes.
Oh, my gosh.
So I keep going, slowly climb all the way up. Eventually, I stopped. I'm like, okay, you can stop here. And I did the video, and I was just in a layer of clouds. So I managed to get all the way out. So that was fine. So I enjoy climbing Stelvio. Wow.
So at this point, you're not thinking about quitting anymore at all.
At this point, quitting was not in my head. At this point, it was like, how do you survive getting up there?
Yeah.
And how do you survive when your left foot clicked in?
Yeah.
So for me, in my head, I wasn't thinking anything further ahead rather than that moment of getting out.
Did you have a vision of what the race would be like and feel like and look like beforehand? And how did it measure up to how it actually was?
I didn't think much about the race.
Okay. You were just like, I'll deal with it when I get there.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was playing naive and innocent.
I like that tactic myself, so.
I did the route map. I'm like, okay, you got the route map. That's fine. And I was like, everyone kept saying you need to spend a lot more time on the route map. So I did try to look at it. I was more worried about my bike setup because my bike was small. I didn't know what to take. And so that was eventually got organized and done. In terms of the whole race, I knew where I need to get to. I knew there's going to be lots of big climb. I knew there's going to be gravel. I knew that my bike setup was for section 3 and 4. And that's why I was slow on 1 and 2 because it's such got fat tires.
Oh, I see what you mean.
So all the climb was really slow.
Okay.
So quitting was not in my head.
How big were your tires?
42 centimetres.
Nice.
42.
Yeah.
They were wide. They were ready for gravel.
Nice.
So I didn't think much of the race. Yeah. I knew it was going to be big. I knew it's hard. I knew it's a big deal to do it.
Yeah.
In my head, I was going for GC.
Yeah.
My head, I was going to GC.
Uh-huh.
And I missed checkpoint one. I was like, I was gutted. And I'm like, that's it. You're out, GC.
How did you get over that?
It wasn't such a big deal. It was just like, okay, you didn't, what are you going to do now? In my head, it's too early to quit.
Yeah.
Too early to quit. You can't quit now. So just get to checkpoint one. We deal with it when we get there. So got to checkpoint one. Obviously, in the back of my head, I'm going for checkpoint two. So throughout while I'm going to checkpoint two, everyone's getting ready for the finishing party. I haven't even reached checkpoint two. People were saying, maybe you should plan turning round, Han, and go home.
Did you have people suggest that?
Yeah.
Wow.
And I'm like, no, I'm not ready to go home.
Yes.
I'm not ready to go. But I didn't realise, it's only after that my sister put in perspective that checkpoint one, the winner arrived. Checkpoint two, people getting ready for the party. And we're not even there yet. That's so the timeline was all blur. So I made it out and I thought, I'd just go, keep going. I thought, okay, so you missed GC. Let's go for the closing time. 20th of August. You got until 20th of August. Just go.
Yeah.
So carry on my ride, going down the route. And then I missed the closing time.
Mm-hmm.
I think by then I hit checkpoint 3, okay. I think around that time.
Milestones,
yeah. Idea was planted in my head of like, maybe checkpoint 3, I should go home. I'm like, okay, yeah, maybe I should, because I did allow time to do the race. My idea was to do the race maybe 14, 20 days, and then the rest I can just enjoy, have a nice holiday, maybe do a holiday tour back home.
Yeah,
that was the plan.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to checkpoint 3. I'm going further. I'm not going home. I turned around to my sisters. I'm not going home, sis. I'm not going home.
I'm getting goosebumps.
And then sitting that night, the guy who was the owner of the place,
mm-hmm.
he was talking, and he was telling me how people were walking their bikes up the parkour, how he can assist me if I need to arrange to go home. And back of my head, while I'm listening to him, I'm not going home, mate.
Oh,
I'm not going home. So next morning, breakfast, guilt ready, out I went. I was so excited to get going that I didn't really restock.
Oh, no.
So throughout Albania, I didn't have a lot of food.
Oh, no.
So I didn't really, I forget to restock food, but I did have some, but I didn't have enough. And so that was it. In the back of my head, I was going all the way. And I started approaching to Greece. That was an emotional stage. I was in tears. And I was like, this is it. That's it. There's no turning back, Han. There's no turning back.
Wait. So before we get to you finally finishing, at this point, you have quite a large following of Dot Watchers who are very invested in your story, and it becomes very apparent that you are not stopping. And I think it's at that point that people are kind of extremely interested in you and start losing their minds over you. Were you aware of this following during the race?
No. I had no idea.
Wow.
I had no idea. I had a couple people dropping me hint that people were watching, and I didn't like think much of it. And I didn't realize that I had so many followers or people watching me. The penny didn't drop.
Yeah.
I just kept going.
Right.
And I didn't realize it was such a big deal. All I know is that I had to get to the end. And at that point, I still had some days to go for the closing time. And then I had punches, flats after flats after flats, and it was getting frustrating.
Yeah.
And that was the poor guy in the bike shop. He was the last person that had to deal with me on my bike. Everyone kept taking me to car mechanics to get my bike fixed.
Right.
And I was like, no, I need a bike shop. I need somebody to look at my bike to find out what is wrong with it. It kept going flat. And then, unfortunately for me, at that bike shop, when I had the bike sorted out from the other mechanic, he busted the valves.
Oh.
So there is an issue there.
Okay.
So again, as I walked in, he looked at me, looked at the inner tube, and he said, okay, I can change the inner tube. I was like, no, I do not want an inner tube change. I can do that myself. So I got my phone out, typing translation, trying to do his translation. And he, by that time, he already took it out, and he pointed out to me the problem. I know that's the, okay, fine, that's the problem. But there's another underlying problem there. I was like a mad woman. Seriously, you didn't want to deal with me then.
I can't picture it.
I grabbed the wheel. I ripped the rim tapes off, got out the baby wipe, cleaned it really with aggression, and I gave it a neat. And then after I cleaned it, he took it back. He put it all back to me. No puncher afterwards.
Amazing.
No puncher. But I wish I spent more time and calmed down and think about it.
Right.
I had it clean rather than wasting. I think I wasted 2 days.
Right. The urgency of the race.
The urgency of the race.
So
the panic.
Much. Yeah.
Of get a move on rather than stay calm.
And you're so close at this point as well.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. And that's that pushed me further back, and I missed the closing time.
Oh.
Gutted. So that was it. That was like, okay, right, your goal now is to finish.
Yeah.
And that was it.
Well, that's ultra, right? Is adjusting as you go, adjusting expectations and making sure that if something isn't met, that doesn't end your race. Because you're just responsible for not ending your own race.
Yes, that's right. So the thing that keep going in my head is like, this is what you put yourself into to do. This is what you wanted to do, and this is what you dream of doing. And your body's not broken. Your body's not broken. Keep going.
one question that I have for you with your BBing experience and such, because that's such a big deal for a lot of people who haven't done an ultra race before, and it seems a bit of a non-issue for you. Were you already comfortable?
No.
Because the way you talk about it, you were just like, yeah, I was going to start the race, I was going to BB anywhere, but I was wet. But you were just...
That was the first time I used a bivvy.
Wow.
And no, sorry. I did the Salted Spring.
Yes.
So that's when I used a bivvy.
Okay.
So I had the experience.
And how was it the first time?
The first time it was, well, I didn't do it off the road. I went into the campsite. So yeah, there was still a bit of security there.
Yeah, legitimacy.
but yeah, it was fine. I thought, yeah, that's fine. I can do this. It's warm. I don't have a problem. It's doable.
Yeah.
It wasn't such a big deal. I think I got to on the Salted Spring. I just climb in and covered up. Yeah. I didn't bother putting the loop over, and I only put the loop over when in Greece because it was warm. So I thought a bit of breathing space.
Yeah,
and I was starting to find nice places to do bivvy. So I do.
So you got in a groove about it. And it was all good.
That was all good.
That's awesome.
Many
people would rightfully say that your performance was incredibly inspiring. And I personally think that you have inspired people to think twice, maybe, about doing, not thinking twice, but thinking maybe
they should do it.
TCR. Yeah, yeah. I really do.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love to hear that the people who I inspired get out and sign up and do it.
Yeah.
So throughout the whole race, this is another of my losing time. People were so interested in talking to me. They look at my size and they look at what I'm doing and they're like, oh my God. And they wanted to know more.
Right.
So I was telling them the stories, and I love meeting the mothers who say, oh, my daughter started cycling. They're going to want to talk about you. Can I take a photo? I'm like, yeah, okay. So people were taking a photo of my bike, my bivvy along the way. There's a couple of ladies I met and they were like, yeah, I'm going to tell my daughter about this. And then there was a guy, he was in Switzerland. He was like, I've been following this for years. I was like, I don't know what to do it. And like, just do it. What are you talking about? Just do it. I was more interested in ladies, getting inspiring the ladies, actually. I met quite a lot of older ladies on the cycling. They were like, if you're young, you can do it. And I was like, not that young. You can still do it. Everyone can still do it. The body's amazing. I'm trying to convince them. The body's amazing. If you adapt, you can do it. So,
Just come to my Pilates class.
Yeah, exactly. Come to Pilates class, you'll be fine. So that was great. And I love it when people ask me if my bike's electric. And I said, no.
I get that so often on
and then
the road.
They said, why are you going to power? I pointed to my legs.
Yes, hon. That's incredible.
I love that. I love that question when they ask. So that was the shock to them. So for me, the reality, I didn't think so much about the race. I think my naivety really helped a lot. I didn't realise what hills are coming up. It's like everybody was like, oh, we're going to rest and have a... let the body relax before climbing the next section.
And you were like, what's the next section? You know, a lot of people do race like that, and a lot of people who race very well and who do this a lot and have a lot of experience race like that. There was an interview we did with Robert Mueller, who was up front at this race, and he was saying that most of the time he didn't know where he was.
Yeah.
And I personally love that tactic. It's not for everybody, but you clearly do.
Yeah. Because when someone at home, where are you? And I don't know.
Yeah.
Look at my dots. I'm going to see on the moon. Look at my dots. I send them the link. I'm like, I don't know. And then like, I had no idea where I am. But I'm so glad with the technology, but all the photo you take, it tells you where you are.
Yeah, perfect. Amazing.
So now I can look back and refer to where I am.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was a nice thing. So so did it meet my expectation? I think in terms of distance and climb, it's what I thought TCR is all about. But I think had I pushed more for GC... and I didn't have all those problems, then maybe I would be in a bit more pain, maybe a bit more, because I enjoyed it too much.
I guess that
I think that I was enjoying it too much, and that's what kept me going.
Okay.
because I didn't suffer any pain. I didn't any climb that goes up ahead. I didn't like, oh no, I'm not going to do it. I'm just going to crawl up slowly.
Well, this comes down to what you as an individual or what any individual yeah. wants out of a race yeah. or out of a TCR experience. And that can change year to year. It sounds like you're hungry for pushing yourself a bit more.
Yeah. Yeah, I want to do more.
But I think that the way that you raced is just as brilliant. Okay, you've sort of already said what your tagline is to people who are thinking about the race. Just do it.
Just do it. Just do it. If you're thinking about it, well, one important thing. Don't let other people's fear blend into yours.
Right.
I didn't let a lot of people around me didn't know I was doing this. Only close people knew I was doing it.
And that was intentional?
That was intentional because yeah. I didn't want any negativity going into my head.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only the day before, I'm part of the runner groups, lots of groups, and I'm part of that. And I was like, I'm going to sign out a group. This is what I'm doing. You want to follow me? Here's the link. And then I went off. Yeah. So nobody had a chance to say anything. A couple say good luck and all that stuff, but that was it. And it's only when now I'm afterwards talking to them, like, what did you do, Han? they love it. They love it. They think it's awesome. But some are like, Han, what did you do? But your diet, you're vegan, and you can't, what did you eat? Like, what are you suffering? I'm like, but I survived.
You figured it out.
Yeah. I think I didn't want negativity go in my head.
Yeah.
And I didn't want people to talk to me about the next climb.
I love it.
It was good job that I was so far behind I didn't bump into anyone.
It was a very individual experience for you. As you were saying to me before we started talking today, that it's important for you to be on your own and figuring things out on your own.
Yeah, definitely.
It's a really special experience, ultra racing, isn't it?
It is. I didn't know. I didn't realise and I didn't know. But so if you think about it, just don't think about it, just do it.
So that was the incredible Han, an amazing ambassador for the Mike Hall Bursary, but also the Transcontinental and the sport itself. Her enthusiasm and drive are infectious, and she's just one of those people who make you feel wildly motivated about life after you speak with them. I hope you enjoyed Han's recounting of her TCR number 9 journey. With this year's race being the 10th anniversary, it's sure to be a special one, with the route stretching from the iconic Roubaix Velodrome in France all the way to the Bosphorus Strait in Istanbul, Turkey. As you heard, Han endeavors to be there, determined to claim a spot on the coveted general classification finishers list. Please consider sharing this podcast with any women or non-binary people in your life who you think might be inspired by listening to it. Inspiring more folks in the sport to believe in themselves is the whole motivation behind the creation of this new podcast series, which will come to you monthly throughout 2024. Our awesome podcast music has been brought to us by the wonderful musician and cyclist, Jessica O'Neill. Links for that and anything else we talked about in this episode can be found in the show notes. Thank you so much for listening, and I will be back very soon with a new episode of Women Who Race.
So wild, can't be.